Some days elapsed, and ice and icebergs all astern, the Pequod now went rolling through the bright Quito spring, which at sea almost perpetually reigns on the threshold of the eternal August of the tropic. Stubb, the old second mate, came up from below with a certain unassured, deprecating humorousness, hinted that if Captain Ahab was pleased to walk the planks, then no one could say nay, but there might be some way of muffling the noise, hinting something indistinctly and hesitatingly about a globe of tow and the insertion into it of the ivory heel. Ah, Stubb, thou didst not know Ahab then.
Am I a cannonball, Stubb, said Ahab, that thou wouldst wad me that fashion? But go thy ways. I had forgot. Below to thy nightly grave, where such as ye sleep between shrouds, to use ye to the filling one at last. Down, dog, and kennel.
Starting at the unforeseen concluding exclamation of the so suddenly scornful old man, Stubb was speechless a moment, then said excitedly, I am not used to be spoken to that way, sir. I do but less than half like it, sir.
Avast! Gritted Ahab between his set teeth, and violently moving away as if to avoid some passionate temptation.
No, sir, not yet, said Stubb, emboldened. I will not tamely be called a dog, sir.
Then be called 10 times a donkey, and a mule, and an ass, and begone, or I'll clear the world of thee.
And as he said this, Ahab advanced upon him with such overbearing terrors in his aspect that Stubb involuntarily retreated. It was not a great while after this affair that one morning shortly after breakfast, Ahab, as was his wont, ascended the cabin gangway to the deck. Soon his steady ivory stride was heard, as to and fro he paced his old rounds upon planks so familiar to his tread that they were all overdented, like geological stones, with the peculiar mark of his walk. But on the occasion in question, those dents looked deeper, even as his nervous step that morning left a deeper mark. And so full of his thought was Ahab, that at every uniform turn that he made, now at the mainmast and now at the binnacle, you could almost see that thought turn in him as he turned, and pace in him as he paced, so completely possessing him, indeed, that it all but seemed the inward mold of every outward movement. It drew near the close of day. Suddenly he came to a halt by the bulwarks, and inserting his bone leg into the auger hole there, and with one hand grasping a shroud, he ordered Starbuck to send everybody aft.
Sir, said the mate, astonished at an order seldom or never given on shipboard except in some extraordinary case.
Send everybody aft, repeated Ahab. Mastheads, there, come down.
When the entire ship's company were assembled, and with curious and not wholly unapprehensive faces were eyeing him, for he looked not unlike the weather horizon when a storm is coming up, Ahab, after rapidly glancing over the bulwarks and then darting his eyes among the crew, started from his standpoint, and as though not a soul were nigh him, resumed his heavy turns upon the deck.
All ye mastheaders have before now heard me give orders about a white whale. Look ye! Do you see this Spanish ounce of gold, holding up a broad, bright coin to the sun? It is a $16 piece, man. Do you see it? Mr. Starbuck, hand me yon topmaul.
Receiving the topmaul from Starbuck, he advanced toward the mainmast with a hammer uplifted in one hand, exhibiting the gold with the other, and with a high, raised voice exclaiming,
Whosoever of ye raises me a white-headed whale with a wrinkled brow and a crooked jaw, whosoever of ye raises me that white-headed whale with 3 holes punctured in his starboard fluke, look ye, whosoever of ye raises me that same white whale, he shall have this gold ounce, my boys.
Captain Ahab, said Tashtego, that white whale must be the same that some call Moby Dick.
Moby Dick, shouted Ahab. Do you know the white whale, then, Tash?
Does he fan tail a little curious, sir, before he goes down, said the gay header deliberately.
"'And has he a curious spout, too?' said Daggoo. "'Very bushy, even for a Parmaceti, and mighty quick, Captain Ahab.'
"'Captain Ahab,' said Starbuck, who with Stubb and Flask had thus far been eyeing his superior with increasing surprise, but at last seemed struck with a thought which somewhat explained all the wonder. "'Captain Ahab, I have heard of Moby Dick, but it was not Moby Dick that took off thy leg.'
"'Who told thee that?' cried Ahab, then pausing. "'Aye, Starbuck. Aye, my hearties all around. It was Moby Dick that dismasted me. Moby Dick that brought me to this dead stump I stand on now. Aye, aye!' he shouted with a terrific, loud, animal sob, like that of a heart-stricken moose. "'Aye! Aye! It was that accursed white whale that razeed me, made a poor pegging lubber of me forever and a day. Then, tossing both arms with measureless imprecations, he shouted out, "'Aye! Aye! And I'll chase him round Good Hope, and round the Horn, and round the Norway Maelstrom, and round Perdition's Flames before I give him up. And this is what ye have shipped for, men, to chase that white whale on both sides of land, and over all sides of earth, till he spouts black blood and rolls fin out. What say ye, men? Will ye splice hands on it now? I think ye do look brave.' "'Aye, aye!' shouted the harpooners and seamen, running closer to the excited old man. "'A sharp eye for the white whale! A sharp lance for Moby Dick!' "'God bless ye!' he seemed to half-sob and half-shout. "'God bless ye, men! Steward, go draw the great measure of grog!' "'The measure! The measure!' cried Ahab. Receiving the brimming pewter and turning to the harpooners, he ordered them to produce their weapons, then ranging them before him near the capstan, with their harpoons in their hands, while his three mates stood at his side with their lances, and the rest of the ship's company formed a circle around the group. "'Drink and pass!' he cried, handing the heavy charged flagon to the nearest seaman. "'Attend now, my braves. I have mustered ye all round this capstan, and ye mates, flank me with your lances. And ye harpooners, stand there with your irons, and ye stout mariners, ring me in, that I may in some sort revive a noble custom of my fishermen fathers before me. Advance, ye mates, cross your lances full before me. Well done, let me touch the axis." So saying, with extended arm, he grasped the three-level, radiating lances at their cross-center. While so doing, suddenly and nervously twitched them. Meanwhile, glancing intently from Starbuck to Stubb, from Stubb to Flask, it seemed as though by some nameless interior volition he would fain have shocked into them the same fiery emotion accumulated within the latent jar of his own magnetic life. The three mates quailed before his strong, sustained, and mystic aspect. Stubb and Flask looked sideways from him. The honest eye of Starbuck fell downright. Silently obeying the order, the three harpooners now stood with the detached iron part of their harpoons, some 3 feet long, held, barbs up, before him. "'Stab me not with that keen steel. Cant them over. Know ye not the goblet end? Turn up the socket. So, so. Now, ye cupbearers, advance. The irons. Take them. Hold them while I fill."
Forthwith, slowly going from one officer to the other, he brimmed the harpoon sockets with the fiery waters from the pewter.
"Drink, ye harpooners. Drink and swear, ye men that man the deathful whaleboat's bow. Death to Moby Dick. God hunt us all if we do not hunt Moby Dick to his death."
The long barbed steel goblets were lifted, and to cries and maledictions against the white whale, the spirits were simultaneously quaffed down with a hiss. Starbuck paled and turned and shivered. Once more and finally, the replenished pewter went the rounds among the frantic crew, when, waving his free hand to them, they all dispersed, and Ahab retired within his cabin.